It'll be in the show notes. The infamous show notes.
They're also ghostly. They never appear.
So, welcome to the Screams and Dreams podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Chelsea.
I'm Allison.
And I'm Melissa.
If you're joining us for the first time with this podcast, you'll hear us discuss in terrifying detail, particularly today, all the spooky and scary things. And today we're talking about a Scream topic, hauntings in Canada. And as a reminder, we are still collecting Sunday scary stories where we want to hear from you, our listeners, to talk about your nightmares, weird dreams, anything that goes bump in the night. And you can always write to us at screamdreampod@gmail.com or send us a message through our Instagram at screamdreampod.
Send us your ghost stories. Alien stories.
Yeah, ghost stories too.
And if you hear anything today that you want to elaborate on, please send us the details. We want to hear what's happening close to your area.
Please do. And of course, we have our small but mighty Mary, our fourth host. She doesn't speak, but she's with me, and she's never been happier. Her hair's growing. Her nails are growing.
Her hair's growing. If her hair's growing, we have an issue.
Or a miracle. What was that?
No, what was the doll that the hair grew?
Yeah.
She's the one in Japan.
Japan, yeah. Yeah, I can't remember her name, but.
So she's great. She's living her best life. She is ready to make some confessions about when she was locked in a shed. And she's ready to create her tell-all book. We're in discussion with some publishers.
I can't wait to read that.
Book agents. Things are looking up for Miss Mary. She's going to benefit from everything that she experienced in the shed. Oh, I almost think I got a title there.
Out of the darkness.
Out of the dirt.
Out of the dirt.
Out of the darkness. The untold story of Mary in the shed.
There we go.
Perfect.
Autobiography.
Oh, God.
We'll see. It might start off as a poem.
And see what it morphs into.
Yeah. And if everyone's like, who the F is Mary as we're talking, you can check her out on our social media channels. She's the non-human doll on the pictures.
So what has made you scream or dream this week, ladies? Anything? Anything good? I have nothing to contribute as usual.
I failed. I didn't document. I had some good ones, but I didn't document. I definitely failed this past couple weeks.
I have
had... Allison, it's on you. No pressure.
Well, I had a dream last night that, and I think this is really where the hope of reopening up our beautiful province is coming through. I had a dream last night that my aunt was having a surprise party. Well, we were holding one for her and she had no idea. And during that party, all of my ghosts of relatives past were there. And I had a lovely little visit with a few people who I'd never really met but only heard of, and mm-hmm. only one scary child sitting in the corner.
Oh, only one.
Well, yeah, so it was a lovely party, very nice surprise. And from that party, a coworker and I started running up a hill that was all mud. So I'm back to mud dreams.
Uh-oh.
Which, you know what? I'll take it. So I looked up one of the other... alternate verses for mud, and it says, if you see mud in a dream, it means that you will fight for survival. In the following period, you will feel jeopardized because certain aspirations could appear. The effort you have been investing in for years could become vain overnight. So mud continues to appear in my dreams, and it was lovely to see all of my family together in one household.
Scary yeah. ghost child aside.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I didn't talk to him, but maybe I will. He was just there. And while on the subject of ghosts, we invite you for this episode to talk about truth or scare. How about a mixture of both? Canada is seriously spooky. Yes, we're polite and kind to our neighbors, but there's definitely a quiet smattering of hauntiness in our fair country.
Hauntiness.
In towns scattered across the country, there are ghostly hauntings all year round in places ranging from railway tunnels to a former tuberculosis hospital. We invite you to go ahead and visit them if you dare. us Canadians love to get our freaky scare on, and we love ourselves a good paranormal investigation. So much so that we research on this episode resulted in a decision to make our first ever two-parter because there is so much hot goss to cover. But beware, not all is fun and frivolity when it comes to ghosts. Some people take paranormal phenomena very seriously. Armed with EMF meters to indicate the presence of electromagnetic energy fields, the footprints of the spirit world, if you will, and cameras that go boldly where spirits from another dimension have been spotted. We took some research from this episode from Paranormal Studies and Investigations Canada. We thank you very, very much. We appreciate it. And the lesson here is that no matter where you go, look and listen, that blast of cold air, an eerie feeling, unexplained noises, and the goosebumps in your arm may be telling you that you've been joined by an unexpected traveling companion nearby. From spaghetti dinners to pervy, grabby ghosts and bride fallacies, we hope you enjoy a little bit of being haunted, eh?
Okay, so we're going to kick things off with a little homegrown haunt here in Victoria, BC, at the Maritime Museum of British Columbia. And this is where we live, so yay! I feel so comforted. So, the dearly departed seem to have a fondness for the city, cheekily known as a place for newlywed and nearly dead. I feel like that's starting to like phase out though. I feel like there's more family takeover.
Yeah.
So, located in Victoria's well-known Bastion Square is the Maritime Museum of British Columbia, which was once the site of the city's jail and gallows. Some say if you look through the windows at the museum's entrance, a shadowy, slender, Van Dyke bearded figure can be spotted gliding down the main staircase. The mysterious apparition is thought to be the ghost of Sir Matthew Bailey Begbie, Victoria's infamous hanging judge.
Didn't we go there for our ghost tour? We did. But we're not inside. But...
Was it the one that you and I did on that, Allison, when we went in to do the EMF readings?
Mel and I.
What? When
Mel
did you guys do that?
To one at the Maritime Museum, and there were EMF recorders. There were many tools that were fun to play with, and we walked through the museum with all of the lights out.
Ooh.
And I believe that was very close to Halloween, so it was extra spooky.
Okay, well, we need to do that again sometime.
But this is the inception of what made us want to eventually do a podcast.
Yeah. It's just I'm sad
creepy.
I'm sad I wasn't there for that.
I don't know if you were ready for that at that point in your life, Chels.
Might not have been.
Okay, so the next one is, I haven't heard about this one. So Fort Garry Hotel in Winnipeg. Specifically, believers claim room 202 as a spot where a woman committed suicide after knowing her husband perished in an automobile accident.
Mm.
That's sad.
Mm-hmm.
It was featured by Creepy Canada, a TV show, and some hotel guests avoid the notorious room 202 and request suites as far away as possible, while others embrace the idea of having an entity for company and ask for it. Okay, so would you be close to 202 if you were at Fort Garry, or would you be as far as possible if you had to stay at the Fort Garry Hotel?
I might go to like room 206.
Okay.
You know.
Allison?
Close enough, but not right in there.
I would go to room 201 and then hope that there's adjoining doors so that I can peek in and take a look if I wanted to.
Okay.
Hopefully. What about you?
I would be in the furthest place away from it. And then I would visit your close, brave rooms. And then I would go back to my faraway room and sleep.
Well, probably not for long because we'd be running screaming down the hallway, refusing to stay in the rooms that we were in eventually.
Yeah. So even housekeeping staff has reported blood oozing down the walls in the room.
Ooh.
Some former guests say a figure in a cloak stood at the end of the bed watching them. And that suicide and a murder as well in the Grand Hotel built in 1913 may be the root of this evil. So who loves the old spaghetti factory?
Oh, man,
raise your hands. Who loves a good carb?
That pistachio and a good ice cream.
So the concept of the old spaghetti factory is a knockoff of a U.S.-based restaurant that originated in Portland, Oregon. An expansion into Canada saw the first restaurant opened in the Gastown neighborhood of Vancouver, B.C. in the 1970s, which is like a pretty haunted place, right, in Vancouver?
Super haunty.
super hauntiness is in Gastown. Located in an old grocery wholesaler's at 53 Water Street, the old spaghetti factory's signature feature is an old trolley car and assorted other artifacts and antiques. In 1969, the trolley car was installed in the building, and patrons can even sit in it today as they enjoy their meal. That's cute. The owners had no idea that they would also be inheriting four separate ghosts in their brand new establishment. There was so much activity within the restaurant that a psychic was brought in to investigate, who identified a vortex located at the back of the premises. Oh my God.
Fun.
Scary.
So for those who are unfamiliar, oh my God, a vortex is a portal to other dimensions that enables spirits to come into our world. And we've talked a lot about mirrors being portals on this podcast, but they do also exist in other forms. Some also believe that vortexes are linked to the Earth's electromagnetic field, and these fields and energies can influence when and where portals are accessible.
So you may recall the vortex in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, where Angel has be sucked into hell after Buffy kills him with a giant sword. Vortex.
Spoiler.
Spoiler.
I miss that show.
Me too.
Miss it a lot. That brings me back. Okay. Anyway, the psychic investigator indicated that there were a few decorative artifacts that the spirits had connected and attached themselves to. The short explanation is that there is a belief that spirits can attach themselves to artifacts and travel along with them, which is terrifying. So you are all familiar with that when we did our dolls episode, and that came up as they're the artifact that spirits latch themselves to.
Robin's haunted dresser.
And Robin's haunted dresser, which is definitely another episode of terror.
And an interview in the future.
Yeah.
Stand by, folks.
The night Chelsea first believed.
It really was.
It's a magical night for so many different reasons. So overall, there are rumors of four separate spirits that haunted the old spaghetti factory. And without further ado, here they are. I will kick it off with the conductor. The first ghost sighted in the old spaghetti factory is known as the conductor, who has been sighted in the restaurant's trolley car. There is a debate about whether or not he came with the trolley or exists on the property in which the restaurant was built. Many believe this was the train conductor himself. Ugh. Patrons and staff have experienced unexplained drafts and found the table settings have been mysteriously rearranged. There are stories that the conductor passed away after a collision on the underground rail line below the restaurant, but this is unlikely due to the fact that the Vancouver's trolley cars all ran at street level.
Well, that pokes a hole in that theory.
Yeah, debunked. So in 1957, it and dozens other trolley cars were decommissioned in favor of the electric and diesel buses that are commonplace in the city today. The assumption is that the conductor's ghost likely attached to the tram car and came with it. Old spaghetti factory employees have reported seeing the ghost in full uniform inside the tram after the restaurant closes in the evening.
Fun. So the next ghost living in the old spaghetti factory is Red Man Looky Lou, which is a fun name.
So that sounds creepy whether you're dead or alive.
Yeah. Well, he is creepy. So he has been reported as a small man dressed in a red shirt and red long johns. For those of you that don't know, long johns are today's equivalent of thermal underwear. So he's known as the Little Red Man, and he also sports auburn hair and has a mischievous attitude. To date, no one knows why he haunts the restaurant, but we would say that he is a bit of a creeper. He's also known as Looky Lou because he is known to frequent the ladies' bathroom and surprise those who are indisposed. In fact, two women saw him in the bathroom after looking at them and laughing mischievously, he left through the washroom door. But to their surprise, nobody else had seen the unmistakable man leaving the washroom. One woman tried to take his picture to provide evidence, but when it was developed, it was just a blur. He also bothers the staff, and rumor has it that he roams around the kitchen whispering to staffers and calling them out by their names. Creepy Ew. Little man. Out of the bathroom. Perv. All
right. It's a restraining order right there. Yeah.
All right, so the third ghost that resides within the four walls is that of a young girl known as the Balloon Girl. She sits at the table near the front of the restaurant holding a balloon, and nobody knows who she is. Once, a friend of the restaurant's general manager had a very engaging conversation where the little girl explained that she was looking for her mother. And this conversation lasted several minutes, and when the patron returned to the table after telling the manager about her, she had completely disappeared. Or went back to her table.
Or under it.
I'm looking for my mom. Oh, guess what? I found her. Bye.
Yeah, and then they left.
I mean, that's best case scenario.
Yeah.
And perhaps the most frightening ghost at the old spaghetti factory is a young boy without eyes. Yes, that's right. No eyeballs. Identified by a psychic investigator as Edward, the fourth ghost at this establishment is a little boy who runs around the restaurant and hides. He has been known to play with, bend, and rearrange cutlery. And when staff have encounters and try to call other employees to witness what's happening, the cutlery will miraculously revert back to its original form.
Ooh, that's weird.
Super weird.
I wonder if the little red man is doing that after Edward rearranges things, just to even more of a creep.
Prank on a prankster. Now I always love that.
That's an interesting thing. Are the ghosts aware of each other?
I don't know.
Now there's a thought.
Ooh, that got meta. Okay.
Crazy. Mm-hmm. In 2012, Edward scared the hell out of a female server while she was helping to close up for the evening. She was in the back section, resetting some tables, when she noticed a boy running past her. Thinking it odd that a strange boy was running around so late in the evening, and especially because the restaurant is closed, she followed him. The boy ran under a table along the back wall, turned around, and looked up at her. When she looked at his face, she saw that his eye sockets were empty. She was absolutely petrified and rushed to the front of the restaurant to tell the manager what she saw and resigned on the spot. And did not continue working there.
And no thank you, not a safe workplace.
Yeah. Edward will also sometimes place a dining chair on top of a table in the back section, which the staff find in the mornings. Edward made another dramatic appearance in 2015 with another server. After closing, she saw the boy dressed in a flat cap, wool jacket, and corduroy pants run towards the back of the restaurant. She followed him and he ducked under a table, exactly the same thing he did 3 years before. She also hurried to the front of the restaurant to take the manager back, but alas, when they got there, he was gone. They did notice that the play settings had been disturbed and all the cutlery was in a pile in the middle of the table. On another occasion, a customer sat in a row of booths behind the entrance to the restaurant, and she saw Edward reflected in a mirror on the back wall. When she did a double take to look at him, he vanished.
Ugh. Wow.
Kind of feel sorry for Edward, but child ghosts are so creepy. Especially when they have no eyes and yet are looking at you.
That's the creepy part. Mm-hmm. You just want to, you wonder what happened to that kid.
Yeah.
Or if it is indeed a child, because it could be coming in and out of the vortex.
Could just be a demon.
Yep.
Could just be a demon.
Beware any child ghost.
Don't be a sucker, Mel. Don't be a sucker. Be a demon. We're the little kid ghosts with no eyes.
So our next stop on the Haunted Canada tour is Dead Man's Island, also in Vancouver, in Vancouver's Coal Harbour. Stanley Park is one of the most beautiful parts of Vancouver's trail network, but it's also close to one of Canada's most chilling sites. From its location just adjacent to Coal Harbour, you can see Dead Man's Island, an old graveyard where ghosts are said to still roam.
Well, I just think of all the people who have paid multi-million dollars for condos to look at it.
I mean, it's better than looking at, like, a garbage dump or something, I guess.
Yeah, but did you see something out of the corner of your eye? Did you not?
True. Could really mess with your brain.
It's just little Edward going from home to the... which part is
the old spaghetti factory?
Is it home to the graveyard or home to the old spaghetti factory?
Coming from the graveyard to the spaghetti factory for dinner.
There you go. The island is home to too many bodies to count. There are Indigenous people, British merchant sailors, early pioneer residents of Moodyville, Hastings Sawmill, and the Granville town site. Canadian Pacific Railway workers who died during construction, victims of the Great Vancouver Fire of 1886, those who succumbed to smallpox, and possibly even some of the squatters who made the island their home for many years.
Wow, that's a mixed bag.
That is, yeah. So there's very little information on how Dead Man's Island got its name, but we can attribute it to a long, sordid, and tragic history. Considering the ghostly goings-on in the past and present tenses, this island truly belongs to the dead. There is a lot of history contained on this little island. In the 1700s, the island was the site of a large-scale massacre of 200 Northern Coast Salish warriors. In the past, the Coast Salish often raided each other's settlements. During this particular confrontation, the Southern Coast Salish captured Northern women, children, and elders, holding them hostage. In efforts to save their loved ones, men from the North surrendered themselves instead, hoping for a peaceful exchange. Ultimately, the warriors were unfortunately slaughtered. The island was the tree burial grounds of the Squamish people. John Morton was one of Vancouver's first settlers who visited the island in 1862. He found hundreds of red cedar boxes tied to the upper branches of the trees. Morton took a fancy to the island and attempted to acquire it. Of course he did.
Of course he did.
Why wouldn't he?
Of course he did.
But he decided against it when Chief Capilano pointed out that the island was dead ground and was a scene of a bloody battle between rival tribes. The Salish people were eventually pushed away from Dead Man's Island, and it was, surprise, surprise, taken over by the Europeans. The cedar coffins were removed, and the immigrants used the grounds for their own cemetery purposes and fully disrupted the native cemetery.
That's never a good idea.
Also, aside from these God-fearing pioneers, were those considered to be the outcasts or scoundrels of Vancouver's earlier community. These outcasts included people who had committed suicide, Canadian Pacific Railway construction casualties, lepers, sex workers, criminals, and ruffians who fought each other in the grills and saloons of Gastown. The deceased's coffins were loaded into rowboats, sent over to the island, and buried in small clearings between the trees. In the 1890s, a smallpox plague descended upon Vancouver. And during the outbreak, Dead Man's Island was used as a pest house, or what we refer to today as a quarantine area. As you can imagine, catching the illness was basically a death sentence. Those who recovered were able to return home, but those who were unable to and passed away were buried in the cold, damp, mossy grounds of Dead Man's Island. By 1911, the island was home to squatters who built shacks along the shoreline. Between 1911 and 1939, there were various plans to build a museum, a war memorial, an amusement park, or a dance hall on the island, but none of these were ever realized. Thankfully.
All bad ideas.
That's
all
the, none bad of those ideas. Are, yeah.
And if we think that's not bad enough, from 1899 to 1930, Dead Man's Island was home to a logging dispute. The federal government had leased lands to an American industrialist, Theodore Ludgate, who wanted to build a lumber mill. Needless to say, the local public was furious with the decision. Dead Man's Island was part of Stanley Park, and the common belief was that it was not available for privatization or development. At 6:30 a.m. on April the 24th, 1899, Ludgate headed out to the island with 30 men to log the area. But the mayor at the time, James Garden, anticipated Ludgate's plans and brought the entire police force with him to the island. Ludgate was subsequently arrested when he and the men attempted to cut down a tree. And today, there is a naval base and a couple of other sightings. From 1942, when the naval base was constructed, some reservists report hearing footsteps and chains being dragged around the middle of the night when no one else is around.
No thanks. No.
Well, several others have recounted hearing footsteps on the stairs and furniture being moved upstairs when they think that they're alone, and others have witnessed a strange glow emanating from the trees. They say the glow sharpens into human form.
Ooh.
Some have also heard disembodied voices, footsteps, and other unexplained sounds at the base, but the most active area on the base is building number one. In 1991, leading seaman C. Gran was stationed overnight in building number one as a security guard. And while sitting in the bathroom in the middle of the night, he heard the double doors connecting the main building to the drill hall open and then close.
Pretty unfortunate. He probably wasn't in the position where he could jump up and go investigate.
Literally and figuratively.
Yeah.
Convinced he was alone, he radioed over to the commissionaire, assuming that a colleague had made those noises while doing rounds. The commissionaire replied that he was at the front gate, not in the building.
Yeah, I'm just taking a crap here, and I just heard the doors open.
Not there. Check, check. 1, 2. Not there.
Sorry.
Fran then left the bathroom and searched the entire building, but no one was there. He also double-checked to make sure that all the exterior doors were locked. They were. In 1992, leading seaman J. Eldridge was on the ground floor of building number 1 doing some paperwork in his office. Also thinking he was alone, he heard footsteps moving quickly down a nearby staircase. He promptly investigated and found that the lights were out in the stairwell and he was the only one in the building. Just to make sure, he phoned the commissioner again, who confirmed that Eldridge was the only person on the island. As soon as he hung up the phone, he heard sounds of scrapes and furniture being moved around upstairs. He approached the staircase and listened. The sounds stopped. Apprehensive, he turned on the lights and headed up the staircase to the second floor. I would not have the gall to do that at that point.
No.
Only to find that there was nobody there and nothing had been disturbed. So it's easy for Eldridge to then quickly finish his work and leave the island as soon as he could.
Yeah.
We don't blame you.
Bye.
In 1994, yeah. Petty Officer Lowe was one of the many reservists stationed at the HMCS Discovery. They were using the base for a search and rescue operation, and early one morning, while lying in a cot in a room above the mess hall, Lowe heard voices and people stomping around downstairs. Again, none of his colleagues were downstairs. He assumed that perhaps some reservists from building number 1 had come in and were banging around. He went downstairs to ask them to keep the noise down, but found the mess hall empty. And then when he came back upstairs to bed, the noise started again. Still, nobody on the grounds. So that's a little bit of a history lesson for Dead Man's Island and where we are today.
Wow, I had no idea about this place. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. It's got a lot of history to it. And our next haunting also has a lot of history to it, which is the Port Moody Station Museum. So it's, you know, not only jam-packed with interesting artifacts and heritage, it's also shrouded in rumors of supernatural activity. Last year, the museum's management opened its doors to paranormal investigators after they had heard reports of unexplained noises coming from various parts of the building. After spending a number of nights on site, the investigation team reported having seen flashing lights and cameras switching on and off by an unknown presence. Sound recorders used by the team repeatedly detected a number of voices, including a specter who claimed to be called Peter. So over the years, mysterious footsteps have continued to be heard in the 1908 station building, and a ghostly woman has also been spotted floating about the site. The station building now houses hundreds of items, including the bell from a train that crashed into a nearby lumberyard in 1913, killing 5 workers.
Yowza.
Yes.
This next one's a doozy.
Yeah, history at the forefront of the Tranquil Sanatorium in Kamloops, BC is also chock-a-block full of paranormal activity. It was once used as a fishing and a hunting settlement, and once European contact was established in 1811, 2 families called the grounds home, the Cooneys and the Fortunes. And they would remain here until the family's matriarch was coerced into selling the land to the provincial government for $37,000 back in the early 1900s. Mm. In 1907, Tranquil was built, but was initially as a private center for tuberculosis patients. So the foreboding ruins of the sprawling Tranquil Sanitarium outside Kamloops is absolutely nightmarish. Echoes of its former residents seem to remain, however, as witnesses report off the charts paranormal activity ranging from orbs to eerie disembodied moans.
Gross.
Today, you can actually tour the eerie location, and, you know, it's a huge attraction because it's one of the most haunted places in Canada. And there's even an escape room built into the facility for an added experience.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, that's fun. I would do the escape room for sure.
And really the long and the short of it is that it was used as a sanatorium for the housing of many tuberculosis patients, but then it was also used as a hospital for people with mental illness until it closed in 1983. Hundreds of people have died on the premises and it seems the spirits have never left. There are stories about a mother crying for her child on the 6th and 8th floors, while others have reported hearing the voices of kids playing in the children's ward, or, you know, seeing bright orbs outside the main entrance. And below the building itself has a series of underground tunnels where the voices are heard.
Ooh.
That's terrifying.
You know, I find it hard to believe that any building like that would not be haunted. Because there's so much pain.
Yeah,
and
anguish,
suffering, distress. Anguish, sadness, like, ugh.
So well, they do say that hospitals are some of the most haunted places on Earth.
Oh, I bet. Okay, next up is the Banff Springs Hotel. So the town of Banff was established in 1885 and developed after miners discovered natural hot springs in the area. Dubbed the Castle of the Rockies, is well known to Canadians as one of the most haunted places in the country. And the hotel is noted for a number of different hauntings.
And it's beautiful.
It is.
It's pretty.
Yeah.
It's breathtaking.
William Cornelius Van Horn turned the phrase, since we can't export the scenery, we'll have to import the tourist. The hotel was the brainchild of Van Horn, appointed general manager of the Canadian Pacific Railway. So the original Banff Springs Hotel was constructed of wood and designed by Bruce Price and opened in 1888. The original facility burned down in 1926 and was rebuilt in 1928.
Wow.
The present buildings are considered to be Canadian chateau-esque with elements of Scottish baronial architecture.
Is that a word?
And the arts and crafts movement. In 1988, the hotel became a National Historic Site of Canada and is now considered to be a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Such notables as Queen Elizabeth II, King George VI?
Yes.
Nailed it. Helen Keller, Marilyn Monroe, and others have all stayed at this property. But enough history for now. Let's get to the meat of our story. So the secret room. Upon constructing the pre-fire building, a room inadvertently was built without any windows or doors and subsequently was sealed up. Kind of sounds like a panic room. No adverse events occurred in this space, but visitors report hearing unexplained noises and paranormal activity in the immediate area. When the original wood building burned down, the mysterious room was discovered, and there's no apparent reason for the inexplicable apparitions and activity. However, some research indicates that this room, when rebuilt, has been combined with another to create a larger suite. Hotel room 873 has supposedly been drywalled over, and while every one of the hotel's floors has a room ending in 73, this floor does not.
Ooh, I like it when they pay attention to the lore of the building.
Yeah.
Respect.
According to the spooky legend, a family of three, mother, father, and daughter, were murdered in this room. Some stories claim the father had a bout of insanity and was the perpetrator who carried out this heinous crime. While many speculate that Stephen King's book, The Shining, is named after the Banff Springs Hotel, it's actually the Stanley Hotel in Colorado. So we'll clear up that misnomer today. So the spirit of the mother, and particularly that of a young girl, her spectral daughter, seemed to linger in the vicinity of this room. Guests who stayed in the room after the subsequent investigation and cleanup reported being awoken in the night by violent shrieks, and chambermaids who routinely cleaned the room would report finding bloody fingerprints on the bathroom mirror that could not be washed off.
No.
In response to the disturbing reports, hotel management sealed off the room. Since the room has been sealed, an impression of a small child sometimes appears on the wall where the door should be. The image has been successfully photographed by some guests. Is any of those images posted on the World Wide Web?
None that I can see. Not any good ones.
Okay. We'll have to dig deep. So guests have claimed to hear violent screams in the dead of night and seen bloody handprints on the mirror. Either way, as of 2017, room 873 is inaccessible from the hallway. Wow, I thought it was sealed up a lot earlier than that. So the second persistent haunting rumor that floats around is known as the Doomed Bride, which Chelsea's going to get into.
Yes, so she's the most famous ghost known in the Fairmont Banff Springs Hotel, and her story dates back to the late 1920s. The story goes that on the young couple's wedding day, the bride, decked out in her wedding gown, descended one of the hotel's marble staircases. Something scared her, causing her to slip and fall. Some say she caught her heel in the hem of her dress. Others say her dress brushed up against a candle flame.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
However it happened, it's horrible. Hotel staff and guests have reported seeing a veiled figure moving up and down the stairs, seeing a figure in a wedding dress dancing in the ballroom upstairs, pining for the first dance with her husband that she was never able to have. Still, others have felt the woman's presence in the bathroom at the top of the stairs where she is said to watch people. Not in the bathroom. Don't watch people in the bathroom.
Another looky-loo.
Mm-hmm.
Those who descend the stairs she died on can sometimes feel a chill breeze even when there is no draft. Others have heard strange noises emanating from the bridal suite when the room was not in use. In addition to this, she has been seen in other areas of the hotel, still wearing her beautiful wedding dress that she died in. No written records have been able to document or confirm this supposed tragedy, though. But the tale is so iconic that Canada actually issued a postage stamp as part of the Haunted Canada stamp series and a collector coin in her remembrance.
And there's a lot of death that happens in hotels as well.
Oh, yeah, Yeah, again, when you have that much energy coming in and out of a place, and not all of it is good.
No.
No, it's not.
And that's a wrap on Canada's Most Haunted Part 1. Am I assuming that Part 2 goes further east?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. We would still love to hear your dreamlike stories, and the screamier the better.
Be sure to check us out on Apple, Spotify, Anchor, and any other podcast platforms that you listen to. Rate and subscribe to our podcast wherever you find your podcast.
Find us on social media at Scream Dream Pod and email us your stories at screamdreampod@gmail.com.
And look out for episode 18 on June 24th. Stay tuned for part 2.
Bye, dollies.